Okay, today is Sunday, December 19th, 2021, and we're in the midst of winter here. It's about as cold as it gets, more or less. And as my daughter said to me yesterday when I complained, we were four generations together, Shabbos, and she said, "Ab, it's winter, you can't expect it to be any warmer." I want to dedicate today's shiur to the memory of Lazar Waldman. It's just the leading item of news in our Rit Sheva. I looked at Rit Sheva at 7, and I looked again at 8:30. I would have been better off not looking at 8:30. Lazar Waldman was literally in my shechva, my chaver. We must be exactly the same age, born 1937. He was not, as I recall, he was not born in America. He spoke English with a slight accent. Either he got to America in the late 30s or he's a survivor. And he went to Torah Vadas. He was a Torah Vadas boy. And in those years, Torah Vadas produced the greatest Zionists. And Lazar got smicha, learned, and came to Israel. If I'm not mistaken, he studied in Merkaz Harav. And he's one of the founders of Hebron. He was at the Bar. Miriam Beinhorn, who's also our shechva, she's our age. Miriam Beinhorn Levinger. And they built here, Abba, he built the yeshiva, Yeshivat Nir, Rosh Yeshiva. Today, his son is one of the Rosh Yeshiva. And he was a Yiddish tzaddik. I cannot tell you the dedication, the lamdan, everything we believe in, Eretz Yisrael, La'am Yisrael, La'pitorat Yisrael. You also have to mention, I had a lot of nachat over Shabbat and the alonim, the freebies to give out here. It's worth living in Israel just to get, every day you get a free paper, Yisrael Hayom, on a level. And Friday you get the Sheva, free of charge, hundreds of pages. And all the alonim add up to another 100 pages. And my wife always says, "What are you wasting your time?" I tell her, "It's not a waste of time. I don't read every word, but I see the fellows who are interested in some articles I read. It keeps me posted as to what is going on in at least my world. If you want to know about the Haredi world, you go to the websites, and the Haredi world is supposed to be fabulous today. But in Olam Katan, they had a whole musaf, a whole addendum on the yeshivat for boys graduating high school, where they should go further, Hesdi yeshiva, Priyami yeshiva, regular Tzioni Dati yeshiva, Duami later. And there's an entire page on Harav Hillel David Rotka. That is my nephew. And read it. You'll see similarities. I knew his brother's my student, Dr. Zevra, who's been listening to Shem for years. But Hillel occasionally picks me up. But you'll see I've had some influence on him, the way we think, etc. So I'm very proud. All right, let it be good for us and good for Klal Yisrael. Let me go further. I want to mention that, first of all, Rabbi Grinstein sent me, Satma came out with all types of new klalim, women can't drive, etc. This is Kiat Yoel in off Spring Valley, off Muncie. And I say to you, what is all these new gezeirot, takanot, what does it show you? It shows you can't escape the big world. It's hitting all of us from Satma all the way to Chovah Beit Torah and all the way to here, Beit Hillel, if you know what I'm talking about. Sohar already is more to the right of Beit Hillel. Sohar is more like a Rabbinical Council of America, I would say. And it's hitting everyone. So, all right, they have all the tachanas in the world, so that's helping the Atatan Bankers. How to explain that in English, I don't know. How to explain that in Hebrew, I don't know, but let it stand in Yiddish, that helped me be a patent bankers. I also want to mention Rabbi Plesky sent me a fallout of Rabbi David Miller's shiur that in relation, I can't go into detail now, but it'd be a shiur and it'd take us half a year, but Baba Batra, the difference between 3 years, is it a raya or is it a kinyan? And the Gainim, he brings down a whole sheet of here in the, that's been uncovered in Gainic literature, that the many learned it's a Kenyan, it's not just a Raya, and that even gets involved with their Avis, it can affect the Halacha. And this takes us back to the old question, when you discover Kitvei Yad, does it affect the halacha or not? And some of you know, I spent a year and a half on this topic many years ago, that Quintus Hashach following Reish Mem Bet and Yoredeya, and find it on Why You Torah if you can, if you're interested. There's a world of material, but I thank Rabbi Kwesky for sending it to me. I also want to mention that my memory is good, and Yomo already, remember I mentioned this big trial going on in New York with Maxwell, and it's all the gossip, all the papers from the New York Times down, that's all they're being fed, the testimony. And I mentioned that I hope Chabad is looking after Hawaii, so everyone looked at me, why do you care about Ghislaine Maxwell? Her father has big schuyot with Chernobyl. And sure enough, Yomo found the article from August 6, 1919 and 1990. And right there in the article, remember I mentioned to Yitzchak Kogan, his name is there, and Robert Maxwell. And Robert, that even played a bigger role than the article mentions me. But it's a schut for her. And tzadeket, she's not, and Jewish, she's not. Her mother's not Jewish. On the other hand, what this man did, and as I told you, I know Yitzchak Kogan going back to 1981, January. And Yitzchak told me very proudly, he adopted one of those Chernobyl children. And today, it's his son to him, lives in the Golan Heights, married many, many children, Kulam Shum Rei Torah Mitzvah. So that alone is a schut for Robert Maxwell. Okay, I want to go further. Today's shir, we're going to touch upon a very, very fascinating topic, which I have to tell you is halacha l'maisa. But we're dealing here with the diet. And an interesting question, is a woman allowed to diet? And again, your gut reaction is, why can't the woman diet? And of course, it's the Gemara in relation to a nazir, who chayav b'kom chatat b'meshe hizir tatzmo min hayayim. And you have an entire elaboration here. I don't believe Rav Moshe Feinstein would cite the Divrei Musa from the Torah Habayit and the Halachic Tshuva, but he cites the Raivad here, the Rabad, and Einach Inami, the Raivad touches upon our basic understanding of what Yiddishkeit is all about, what Torah is all about. And the bottom line is that we have to lead a balanced life. To be a Nazir is not the ideal. I said to you last week, and again, I say this very quickly, but on everything I'm saying now, you can give weeks and weeks of Shayurim and Marim HaKomat. Well, but if this is basic Yiddishkeit, why a Nazir in the Torah then? Because not all of us are the same. Some of us can be Litvakim, some of us can be Hasidim, some of us are going to enjoy a good steak, some of us are more ascetic. If I would tell you what I eat for Shabbos, Elliot, you know, if 50 years ago, I told you I owe an apology to my mother-in-law. She served fish, and I made a face. And she told me it's infinitely healthier than meat. Well, I can't tell you the last time I ate meat in my house. All right, when I go to the kids, I don't want to drive them crazy, so I eat whatever they serve. But we're all different. Someone will say to you, a good Hasidic would say to you, Anaf Kubel, we can design Shabbos without a good noodle kugel, without a good rice kugel, whatever kugel you like, a potato kugel. How can it be Shabbos? And I don't know, I haven't eaten a kugel on Shabbos since the last time I was in that place, in a hotel perhaps. Or maybe at the children, Taco, we eat some kugel. But all right, everyone is different. So there could be someone who feels very guilty. What is doing, what he was doing, where he was at. All right, he can be a Nazir. But a Nazirit is not the norm. It's something for those who need it. And that the Balei Nefesh, the Raivad, is very powerful. And he quotes it and he shows there's nothing wrong. We can feast, we can diet. You have to find a happy balance. We'll see that later in the Rambam. I mean, you're all obvious. This is basic Yiddishkeit. You'll see the Rambam. It's all the yisod of understanding who we are and why we're not Muslims and why we're not Christians. And having grown up in a Catholic neighborhood, yeah, I can tell you, and you see, the church is falling apart. Why is the church falling apart? Because if sex is a sin, the world is going to end. It's impossible. People are created with a sexual desire. We have a different problem, that there's too many scandals of sex. In the Torah world, there shouldn't be any. But people asked me Thursday night, and I said, look, we're living in a world where it's like what I said about Satma 2 minutes ago. The outside world influences all of us. And today we're living in a world where people walk around naked, plain and simple. Go to Tel Aviv, May, June, July, August, September. People are walking naked. Men are naked. Men and women are naked. All right, if men are naked, they look like animals. They look like orangutans. But women are naked. It's attractive. That's the way God made the world. Otherwise, Mark, we wouldn't marry. You understand? It's an open Gemara. Yoima in Sanhedrin, an open Gemara. So thank God God made the world that way. But it affects all of us. And then I have a tremendous critique against the Haredi world. Not publishing pictures of women creates perverts, plain and simple. Do you know that I saw this online, I couldn't believe my eyes. Square put out a chumash that said, could you imagine if God put into the Chumash about Tamar and Yehudah and other escapades in the Chumash, and we censor it? The best education I ever got was that was when I was 13, 14 years old, and my first Shayurim in YU were Masechet Kedushin. Fabulous. We actually didn't. I have to say, we learned Gittin before Kedushin. Rav Yitzchok Katz used to say, before the illness, they teach you the cure. And he was a very happy, his wife was a Mahindi cat, Sikronet Sadeket Lagracha, was something very special. But alright, he had a good sense of humor. And this is the rivet. And then he goes in something that only he can write. Again, I can't believe the Rav would ever say this. Alright, the Rav is not a posek, but nevertheless, Rebbe, do you think the Shulchan of a Tzaddik, of a Rebbe, of a Fitzich, a Tish, you know, a Tish, you think that should influence the Halacha? The Rav would look at you, a Tish, what's a Tish? And he says, how can we say that you can't eat, you can't enjoy life? It's also important that you see a Tish, the Rebbe eats, he sanctifies every piece of food, and you understand the Hasidim, you should have seen when the Hebrew, when the Israeli Museum had that display in Hasid, it must be 10 years ago. It was fabulous. Oh, did they do a beautiful job. And there you had a Tish, you were part of a Tish, you sat down, and there was the whole Tish. It was screens all around the room, and it was a Purim Tish, but it was a Tish. And if you're a Hasid, you look at it with awe. If you're a Litvak, you look at it, boy, this is Yiddishkeit. What does this have to do? All right, the Lubavitcher cleaned it up. There already it's on a different level. And Loa Leinu, as a Litvak, I say this, you know that today, Rav Kanyevsky, they say he has Tishin, that he gives out wine and cake and Rebbeinu Shelayla, where have we gotten to that the Litvisher Welt already is pulling shtick like this? All right, Yomo enjoys it. He's looking at me with a condescending look, but he comes from Collinstone and Chassidim. So I'm very happy to understand. I can't argue with him. He has every right to go to a Tish and boast that he got a piece of covering that the Rebbe bit into the other side. All right. You see that Rav Menashe Klein quotes all the sources. He says, we need a balance. Okay, now I want to go further. And he says something here. So if this is the case, if you can have a Tish, if you can enjoy life. So Rav Menashe Klein is very troubled. What is he troubled by? Why do we talk to say that open Gemara we quoted, I read the Gemara to you last week, that a Nazir is a sinner because he's here tatzmo min hayayin. What do we mean by that? What do you mean he's a sinner? and he says something here. He quotes Tosfos. Just see all the sources. It's Gadol HaMetzuva, that someone who's commanded to do something gets more schar than someone who's not commanded. In other words, if someone, let's say, is blind and he's patur min ha-mitzvah, and he goes and does what he's not commanded to do, he doesn't get the same schar as one commanded. So now you have to ask yourself, why? What is that? And here the Balei Tosfot had tremendous insight. When there's a command, the Yetzer Hara goes to work. In other words, if I want to do a Gemilah Chesed, all right, I do a Gemilah Chesed. If I'm commanded to do a Gemilah Chesed, the Yetzer Hara can play games with you. All right, it's not that you have to do it, it's that you can do it, if it's easy to do, if it doesn't rob you of any energy, of any sleep, Barak, if you're cold, you can turn up the heat. I'm comfortable, but...
Yeah,
you're okay? Okay. And I think we're wearing the same shirts, the same T-shirts, no?
Yeah,
I got from YU. I'm happy to say YU pays me well in T-shirts and booklets to write in, God, but they invest in attracting kids. But you see, when you're commanded, the Yetzer Hara goes to work. When you come along to a kiddush, you know, a shtigel, a Shabbos, this, that, no command, I pay my nickel, take my choice. But when you're commanded psychologically, that is much harder. You see, davening, how many good Jews daven? Every morning I say with tremendous kavana, that you visit the Beis Medrash, Shachris the Adavis, right? Ele the Barum Shem Levin Sheyur, and then in the Otel Payatim Yom Kemiga Ramyom, the Father, the Angel Tame, the Fulu. And boy, do I say that with Kavana, for so many people don't get up early. Could you imagine my grandson, my son-in-law Shul, which he's been running for decades already? I have to give credit that there's individuals that keep a shul going. He keeps Chazon Yecheskel growing. Aaron Katzman, who I never taught, but I taught his sister, his brother, all his cousins, the people they married. Aaron Katzman from Seattle originally keeps a whole Aaron going. And without these two people, these are the people that they're volunteer. So in recent years, whatever the reasons are, Katamon, which is a really expensive neighborhood today because of a YU graduate named Rabbi Arnie Rund, R-U-N-D, I pleaded with Richard Joel, give him an honorary doctorate. He built the Shtiblach. The Shtiblach created Katamon. Until when we came in Aliyah, Katamon was the end of the world, was a Sephardic neighborhood, etc. Poor people. Today, oh, wait a minute. I don't think I'm recording. Jack, you're recording?
Yeah.
Send Yomo what was recorded in Tune now. At this point already, I have the recorders going. Okay. And so, you know, people, you'll talk to people, come to Minyan in the morning, how can I get up? It's difficult, I'm tired, it's the winter, I'm not feeling that well, race, corona, give you 101 excuses. And that's exactly the psychology that HaMetzuvah V'Oseh is better than someone saying HaMetzuvah V'Oseh. Because when you ain't a Metzuvah, you don't have the Yetzer Hara to, I can knock it out, I don't have to, I'm a good Jew anyway. People tell me I daven, I don't miss davening, I put on tefillin, but all right, it's hard to go to shul. And the same thing with a Nazir. He says, why is a Nazir considered a sinner? Because he made himself into a position where the Yetzer Hara is going to bother him. I can't drink wine, I'm not allowed to drink wine, but I'm only a human being, and wine is healthy, and the French drink wine, and the French live longer, etc., etc. And that's one shot he gives why, if you decide not to drink wine as a Nazir, you are a sinner. And he says, if you don't drink wine for 30 days, you're no sinner. If you're not a Nazir, a person doesn't like wine, a person doesn't enjoy wine, a person is on a diet, that's fine, that's good. You make kiddush over bread. There are all types of different ways to solve the problem. But when you become a Nazir, you force yourself into a position where the Yetzer Hara grows bigger and stronger and tries to snare you and entrap you. That's one pshat. Then he gives the second pshat. And the second pshat again comes back to the Ravid. It comes back to understanding basic Yiddishkeit. And here's what Rav Menashe Klein is worried about. And I have to say, on this level of his thinking, as different as our backgrounds are, I come from a third generation American, Litvish by exposure to Rav Aaron Cutler, to Mori Rebbe, Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. But on this level, we have the exact same thinking. What is Rav Menashe Klein worried about? When you decide not to drink wine, what are you saying? You become a Nazir, you're saying, I'm frumer, I'm a bigger tzaddik, I'm more careful, I'm more medayek. Abstinence is good. Well, if you decide not to drink wine, it can go much further. You'll say, why should I eat meat? Why should I eat fish? Then it can go much further. Why should I drink soda? Why should I drink anything good? Why should I eat chocolate? Before you know it, he has a Christian point of view, not a Jewish point of view. Plain and simple. And this is what Rav Menashe Klein says, abstinence breeds abstinence. It's your whole way of thinking starts to become corrupt. And therefore, Misha Hizir, that's Momin Hayayin, you're a sinner. Because this is not the Jewish way of life. And I'm reminded, in the 70s, there was one television channel in Israel. The whole story with television, you're not aware of it, but David Ben-Gurion was opposed to television. Why was he opposed to television? Because he said we're a people of the book. And at night you're supposed to read. Come home from work, you eat, you're supposed to read. Halevi would say you have to go davening, you have to learn. But all right, at least he had some concept that we're a people of the book. And what happened was people were buying televisions here and hooking in to Jordan television. Lebanon television. So 1968, I'm pretty sure I have the year right, it's the year before we came in Aliyah, they had to introduce very primitive television. It was one channel. And it was, on a very immature level. Who would ever dream today you have in Israel many channels? There's entirely one religious channel. And, oh, what you have, choice of, but I don't watch any of it, for any news, I get from the computer. But then I used to, watch television, the news, and then there was a whole program in the early 70s when, after the Yom Kippur War, people started to think in terms of Balei Tshuva. I'll tell you what the difference was. The Six-Day War, you thought we were the greatest people in the world, the smartest people in the world. Moshe Dayan was a Getzka, was an Aliyah, Golda Meir, who these people are. Then came the Yom Kippur War, you saw they were the biggest phonies, idiots, half-wits in the world. Many people we lost because they didn't attack. They understood everything that was going wrong, and they didn't act. And people then realized they have to turn to God. The Baal Tshuva, the Tshuva movement began. So there was a whole program I'll never forget this. And they interviewed so many people who became from, people who didn't become from. And one girl says, yes, I started to become interested. And I went to Shul on Yom Kippur. This is religion. They're crying. They're clapping. They're outchait and their sins. So negative, so destructive. And she said, I never want to walk into a shul again. And I commented to my students, what an idiot. Yom Kippur is one day a year. It's like someone, Ribbono Shel Olam, Natan, you'll go to shul on Simchas Torah. You'll think, all of Yiddishkeit is Simchas Torah. Guy goes on Purim, oh, fabulous, they're dead drunk dancing on the table. You ever see the Chassidim on Purim, what goes on? And Ribbono Shel Olam, there has to be a balance. And this is Yiddishkeit. When you're a Nazir, you are inculcating within yourself a negative attitude to life, to joy, to pleasure, to what God made for us, this beautiful world. We were never commanded to run away from it. And here, I want to show you the source. It's a very important source that the Mishnah Halacha quotes. Before I do it, Yomo, you didn't remind me to turn the tapes on. You didn't set the recording with the computer. Jack is going to send you the first part of the Shia. So combine that with the moment I started recording. And please, Mark and Yomo and anyone else, be smart enough to remind me to start properly. Okay, now, the Rambam Hilchat Deyot, Perik Gimel, Halacha Aleph. And here I have to tell you, see, the Rambam, we always view the Rambam as Psak Halacha. One thing I got out of the Rav, the Rambam was a lot more than Psak Halacha. The Rambam at times, it's like a Rashi, how he interpreted the Gemara, how he learns the Gemara. Very, very important to approach the Rambam with a much wider dimension than just Psak Halacha. A lot of times he had a different gear set in the Gemara. Don't have to tell you that everything was copied by hand. It's not like today, when you print something, you can make 1,000 copies and it's exactly the same and you can keep on reproducing it and you don't make errors. But when you copy by hand, it's impossible not to make errors. And this is why the Shinui Nisqot, all right, it's a science unto itself. It's not for now. My last conversation with the Rav in 1983, when I saw the Rav in person and visited him in New York, and we spoke about many problems, and one of the topics we covered was this question of Kitvei Yad. And that's one thing I gained from the Rav. The Rav's son-in-law, Professor Yitzchak Tversky, Harvard professor / Tolna Rebbe. You had to know Yitzchak. Yitzchak was one of a kind. A Yid, a tzaddik, was the father of Rabbi Moshe Tversky, who was killed in Hanov, the father of Rabbi Meir Tversky, the father-in-law of my Talmud, Rabbi Jonathan Rosenblatt, married to Tzipora. And Yitzchak specialized, his doctorate was on the Ribbit. It was the most, at that time, it was the most famous doctorate ever done in the United States. It was a doctorate on the level of what they did in Germany, what they did in Austro-Hungary, you know, where the Chochmat Yisrael, and here you have an American kid coming out with a doctorate on the highest level. Okay, he devoted his life the rest of the time, not so much to the Ribbit as to the Rambam. He wrote the introduction to the Rambam, and now they came out, it's over 900 pages, I believe. It's a collection of all his articles on the Maimonides, translated into Hebrew. Because his basic language was English, and now it appears that Hebrew is edited by Professor Carmi Horowitz, who's YU Mishmach, who later gets a PhD from Harvard, working under Professor Tversky. And you see, Professor Tversky shows you in the Mishnah Torah, forget about the Moreh Nevuchim, in the Mishnah Torah itself, there's a world of plain, simple, hashkafah, Jewish philosophy, codified in a halachic fashion. See, that was the amazing thing about the Rambam, that, and we'll see this when we deal with the Saf Meruv in the Monday class. You can see what it takes out of Hilchot Deyot. It's mamish musa machshava, and it's codified halacha. And this is the Rambam that Reb Menashe Tzion quotes: Hilchot Deyot Perek Gimel Halacha Aleph. And boy, is this a message for understanding Torah. Shema Yama Adam, Hoel Va'Kineh Va'Tayv Va'Kavod Geisem Derech Ra'ahem Umotziyim Et Ha'Adam Min Ha'Olam. Imagine a person will say, Chazal says, Pidavet Ha'Kineh Ha'Kavod Va'Tayv. Wow. Can I quote Aaron Rakefet to you? I say that these are three different levels of human existence. When we're young, she'er hashirim taiva, the sexual passion. Okay, I referred to it the other day, chatat ne'urim. Thank God we have that sexual passion, or we wouldn't be married. We wouldn't. Who needs kids? There, look what Barak looks like. He can barely open his eyes. You don't know what a joy that child will bring you, Be'ezrat Hashem. I was together with six great grandchildren on Shabbat in the morning with four, the afternoon two. Oh, and they continue Torah. Can't ask for more than that. And then when you grow older, kinner, middle age already, mishlei, you're jealous. Ah, my friend makes more money than me. My friend had a break. My friend had a good appointment. Why didn't I achieve it? Then you grow older. Kohelet, covered. Look what I achieved in life. Why don't I get covered? Why isn't there a testimonial dinner? Why isn't there a testimonial volume? Why? Covered. Hakinava hakovered vataiva. It should be hataiva hakinava. So, all right, I may be right, I may be wrong, but I think I hit the nail on the head. And I've lived it all, I've seen it all. And so a person will say, this is terrible. Let me run away. And it'll go all the way to the other extreme. HaMachalech b'derech zu nikra choteh Shaharehu omeh b'nazir v'kiper alav Meshe ma'asher chata al hanefesh Amru chachameinu ma'im nazir Shelo pirash ele min hayayin Tzarich kapara Hamonei atzmo mikol davar al achat kama v'kama. And I would say that this Rambam is absolutely basic to understanding what Torah is about, what life is about. Now, it doesn't mean that all of us can walk the same path. Again, we all are different types of people. I can tell you my first rabbinate knocked any covered out of me that you can imagine. Mm. I came out of the yeshiva, a hotshot, Talmud of the Rav. I was 22 years old. I already had smicha, two master degrees, a bachelor's, summa cum laude, first in my class. Oh, boy, did I get my face smacked. It has an impact until today. I don't say all Rabbanim have to look the way I do and dress the way I do. I don't know. I've been criticized. I have no self-image, self-respect. I'm too humble. I don't know. That's me. I can't help it. Am I a good Jew? Absolutely. there's room within the spectrum. You follow me? On the other end, the makpid, my clothes should be clean, my clothes should match, the kippah should match the shirt, the pants, you understand? I'm not totally irresponsible. Of course, my wife, I can't pull stick like that without put a brown kippah when I'm wearing a blue shirt, etc., etc. But you see, this Rambam is so powerful, so magnificent, and then he goes on and on, and you can look up the Rambam. It's just fabulous. He says a person has to do work, have a living, have panasa, but do everything within limits. Eat, drink, but your basic life experience, we're servants of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I have to tell you, this has helped me immensely. I've told you more than once, no one knows my name, who cares? Baruch Hashem, I turned down so many offers to be a big shot, to be a Rosh Yeshiva, to be a dean, to be a provost, to be a president. At times they complained to my wife, "We don't understand your husband. They spoke with me at the Kotel, and he turned us down on the spot. At least say, I'll think about it till after Shabbos." But all right, that's me. I'm happy. I'm not a Nazir. I'm on this level. If the whole world was like me, it's not good either. You understand each one? I remember Rabbi Koopman, he had the power to tell someone off. He had the ability, but he ran Mechola. I could never run an institution because I could never fire anyone. I could never tell anyone off. I mean, I don't want to go into more details, but I would see things. Rabbi Horowitz established BMT. He also had that power. He had to choose, make statements. There was a Thanksgiving massacre. You know, it was not 1971. You know what I'm talking about?
They heard about it.
I could never, ever write the guy, celebrate Thanksgiving. What do you want out of them? Then there was an incident with a Talmud of mine from the Kollel and a girl from Mishwala, and Koopman met them as they were holding hands in Machne Yehuda on a Friday morning. Oh, what went on? And he called Rabbi Hart. I told Rabbi Hart, don't make, this is the son of a Rav from out of town. This is a girl from Melbourne. Who knows what level they were raised on? Quiet, quiet, don't embarrass them. And I have to tell you, thank God, one of the two deans involved listened to me. The other one didn't. And it left the scar with this girl until 20 years later, I came to Australia and Nathan took her home Friday night. And I apologized to her. I said, here she's a balabuster, married, children, b'nei Tera. I said, you got to know where you're coming from. I said, I want to offer you shabbat. I felt very bad, but I'm only a Rebbe. I'm not the dean. She said, you made my life, telling me this. It was like it closed. It was closure. But you see, I have to deal with reality. And this Rambam is fabulous. And I can tell you, at times, I admit, I showed Shmuelke Bernstein's. Go and try to explain to Barack what Shmuelke Bernstein's was. Barack, go online. They told me in YouTube there's some old advertisements of Shmuelke. You don't know what Shmuelke Bernstein's was. Rebbeinu Shel Olam has never been equal. So I remember then they're kosher. Then I remember what went on. Rabbi Tendler, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, the trace. I mean, like movies, what happens. So one time when I get off the plane, the first thing, I'll come to America, right? So the first thing I would say, what's with Shmuelke's? You know, I was a kid yet. So we go up to Shmuelke's, a whole group of Talmidim, myself, my wife, you know. And there's the Mashgiach who learned with me in Lakewood. He was a son, he's no longer alive. He was the son of a small Rebbe in the Bronx. And he never went to college, so he was a Mashgiach. I saw him eating, What do you call it? It's off the bones of steaks. Is there a word for that? Oh my God! What? No.
Spare ribs.
Spare ribs. That's it. I saw him eating spare ribs. I walked over, walked my tumulus, and I walked over and kissed him. I said, memories like it. He said, you don't know how happy I am. You're giving that shkocher and you're eating to sign your kenichia. You follow? And all right, but that's the Jew, that's the Rambam, and that's the Benasha Klai. Now, so here, Rabbi Reuben, asked me, so what did he paskin? You can see the whole tshuva was to explain what's wrong with the diet. And he turns to the guy who was asking the question, Rabbi Weinfeld, I should say, and he says to him, I see what really is bothering you is you believe that beauty is not that important. Let me tell you, Al-Pi-Allah, and he gives you sources to another tribute he wrote, he says, and I've had the Shaila Halacha L'maisa. Mark, you're a Rav, a Rebbe, a Yeshiva. No, the Talmud comes to you, Rebbe, my wife is not happy with her nose. It's too crooked, it's too good. My nose. When I was in B'nai Akiva, remember one girl said to me, you'd be so handsome if you had a straight nose. I didn't know what to answer her. Now, if she would say that now, I would say to you, my nose? Did you look at pictures of the Rav? Did you look at pictures of Rabbi Kutler? This nose is the nose of Gedolei Yisrael. Halavai, I should live up to my nose. No, the girl wants to do an operation, get rid of her big nose. I know a very from doctor, right in Shari Chesed, Cayman Aliyah from Lawrence. He is not Natan, a poor man. And he is a dermatologist surgeon, whatever you call it. Maybe not pronouncing it right. Alan, you know what I'm talking about? He tells me he does stucco. What's it stucco? The women who come in Aliyah from Ethiopia, some of them have crosses on their forehead or something, he takes it off free of charge. Any Ethiopian who wants something removed, these tattoos, that's his stucco. But boy, he can afford to get stucco because women come in, they want to do with their bodies, what they want to do with the aging process. No, what do you say, Yomo? Mutter or Asa? This is not an operation that you must have. An operation that you must have is a different story. That's Bikuach Nefesh, my grandson, Dr. Binya. He's medical doctor and PhD. So Binya, when he was accepted into the, they asked him in what they call it, not MIT, but the Technion. The Technion has a program. They asked up to 5 students a year to join. It's for very bright kids, and you have to study for a PhD and then an MD, and they take over all your expenses. From that point on, there's no tuition and all your food and dormitory and a room, and if you're married, an apartment, everything is paid for. And Baruch Hashem, these kids come out le'elo le'ela. So my grandson tells me, when he goes into medical school, the first day they're showing him around and they take him in to an operation in progress where there's a human being all cut open. He said, I was ready to faint on the spot. When you read memoir literature, you'll see doctors will tell you they fainted the first time they saw an operation. No, you're allowed to cut a person open? Pikuach nefesh. Here, a crooked nose, not a crooked nose. He has a forehead, I don't know, it shows signs of age. She wants it filled in. If she's not happy with her ears, what they can do, allowed or not allowed. And the halacha is, Paskins, I'll show you his proof in a second, as long as it's not sakonet nefasha. And it's for the sake of making you more beautiful. Giving you more self-confidence, absolutely allowed. And if this is Kama, to do a diet, to be skinny. And by the way, this came up, you think, with all the Torah learning and all the shtick of Mishpachar and the pictures of women. So at the Agudat Yisrael convention, this topic, we've alluded to it already, this topic came up, the terrible crisis of Shidduchim in the right-wing yeshiva world. And the crisis, you know, everyone talks about every kid, if you learn and build up a good reputation, oh boy, your in-laws have to give you more money and more money and a bigger, I once heard at the Kopa, the Hain Siti, I'm not making this up, these years, you know, I davened 46 years, Kopa, my feet work, my feet no longer work, I have to be honest. The Kotel is very distant, but for 46 years, every Friday night, I davened at the Kotel. So one time I come to Mincha, and I hear these American kids talking. I'm sure one of them I knew who his father was. He was the exact image. I don't want to mention the name. It was a Rebbe of mine. I thought this was his son. I may be right, I may be wrong. And I hear them talking, oh, you got into Brinsk, Mazel Tov. You'll now get 3 bedrooms, not 2. I couldn't believe my ears, but I heard it then at the Agudat convention, this all came up. What the fallout is, if you read the blog of Emet Yemuna, Rabbi Harry Merrilis, who I consider to be very solid, he writes, there's another problem there too, they don't mention. The yeshiva guys are like any other man in the world, we're all affected. They only want women, he says, I'll say it nicely, I'm quoting Harry Merrilis, Rabbi Merrilis now. Size two. You should know that in Russia, when we worked for the, you know, the Mossad there, so one thing I learned that the Russians appreciate a zaftik woman. How do you say that in English? I'll leave it to your imagination. Something to hold. You understand? But we idiots, the Americans, the skinnier, the better, the skinnier. Oh my gosh, a size 2, give me a size 10, a size 12, so like epithet you can hold. And says Rabbi Moshe Klein, he's right on 100%, that there's nothing wrong with a woman being skinny, with a woman looking nice. And he says, if you can have an operation, Alacha Tama Bakama, you can diet. And he says, after Kabanatam Lishem Yofi. And he says, even though their whole reason, hold on one second, Barak, even though their whole reason is to be beautiful. And I don't have to tell you, there's a whole literature that you can develop that Eshet Chayim Yimsa, a woman has to be beautiful for her husband. Isn't this so? Isn't this Alpi Halacha? And he says, as long as the doctors say, I'm quoting him, it can't harm her, she's allowed to do the operation, Alacha Tama Bakama, the diet. Now, what's his proof? He says, don't we pierce women's earlobes, earrings? And he quotes the Gemara in Shabbos. You'll see all the sources that you're allowed, when they pierce the earlobe, in the, I don't know what they do today, but in primitive society, they put in a pin to keep it open, that it should not contract again. And she's allowed to, doesn't the Gemara say she can go out with the pins in on Shabbos? So what do you see? No one in the world questioned puncturing an ear to make room for the earrings. And Dafka, my wife, just said to me on Friday that she has a problem putting on these earrings. The earlobe is closing because she hasn't really used it in years. She has to use earrings where you don't have to put it into the little hole in the ear. So what? It's an irrefutable proof. This is Reb Menashe Klein. Barak.
There's a distinction between men and women, right?
You asked a very good question, so I have to be honest with you. I had a classmate. He said, Gaon Adir, maybe the most learned kid ever raised in America. But he was a character. He never got married. Now, if I would, you ever see what I look like? during the 9 days, my entire beard, I look like I'm 100 years old. All right, I'm not far away from 100, but don't want to get there yet. His beard, always black. Get your answer? For reasons of self-respect, marriage, attractiveness, they're even shiva that a matir, a man dyeing his beard, which is clearly simlat isha. Unfortunately, a few years ago he had an accident and he aged. He no longer dyes his beard. But I met him the first time after the accident, had trouble recognizing him. He aged 30, 40 years in 1 second. But he's given up, evidently. That's it. That's the answer to your question. So if I want to do an operation on my nose, I don't know, I want to look better in public, all right, then they can get in my head. Long as it's not life-threatening. But what a fascinating tshuva. And he ends, v'kol shekein shelo lechol dvarim shehein mashminim oto upon the leka bezecha bala ukemo shekatavti v'zeh pashut. It's axiomatic. It's simple. If you can do an operation for cosmetic reasons, alachat kama v'kama, a woman can go on a diet. But what's fascinating about this tshuva, it opens an entire world of basic hashkafa. What is Yiddishkeit about? The Sefer Torah Tabayat, the Ravid, the Rambam. Basic understanding, and very fascinating insight, the Yetzer Hara. If you say, I'm not allowed to drink wine, make a neder, at that point the wine becomes all the more inviting. It's time you say, I'm not interested in drinking wine, I don't like wine. Yes. What's wrong? What's wrong? I have to be honest with you that my wife doesn't like wine. I developed a bit of taste for wine here in Israel after living here so many years and seeing all these advertisements and all the awards they win. But in my house, all we make Kiddush on and go grape juice of Kedem with peach in it. Mm-hmm. And if that's wine, if I'm Yotzei Dalit, it says Yotzei Kiddush, Adolet, Dalit Kaiser. Gentlemen, we're living in an unreal world. That's all I can tell you. That's wine. That's the sweetest tasting grape juice that was ever invented. The way they make challahs today, you find a shalayim with honey, with black flour, with good flour. Oh my gosh, honey. Raisins, nuts. If that's challah, what challah tasted like in America when I was growing up, in Philadelphia, there was no kosher bakery. I came there 61, Lower Merion, no kosher. One guy, he was a painter, I think, and he made challah as a shemen mitzvah on Thursday, and people ordered, bought from him. They used to say he's confusing the challah he's making with the wallpaper he puts up. You understand? But nowadays, what a world. And the Israeli matzah, I don't know. If that shmura matzah, we used to eat shmura, you could barely swallow it. Today you get your food, the shmura matzah, tam gan eden. Unbelievable. I can eat matzah all year. I still do. And matzah keeps fresh. Unbelievable. What a matzah. It's great to be a Jew. But Baruch Hashem, we can enjoy life within reason. Ah, now we come to a question. This is a question. If anyone has been Torah, this question has to haunt you. One time I was still in residence, North Miami Beach, and the rabbi, Rabbi Frank Shapiro, a wonderful rabbi, a wonderful human being, God give him strength. He was quite ill years ago. Thank God he's recovered. And I remember one time he came into Mincha, and he was so, Shabbos Mincha, and he was so perturbed. And before I got up to speak to give my shir, he said, I just want to say a few words, but I just saw a terrible sight. And he saw kids playing baseball on Shabbos. Some kids, North Miami Beach, got a lot of from people in it. Okay, you're familiar with North Miami Beach? It's south of Hollywood. It's north of Miami Beach. Ah, that's why it's called North Miami Beach. It's where the tragedy was, the building that caved in. It's north of that. I don't think it's within walking distance. And I've taught a lot of students over the generations from North Miami Beach. As a matter of fact, in the Monday class, when Vic's family was here, so Vic's niece lives in North Miami Beach. She's a student, married to a student, Dr. Dennis. Wonderful, wonderful people, Mark and Joanna. So he was very upset the kids were playing ball. All right, this leads us to a whole question. Forget about Shabbos. Are you allowed to play ball? Are you allowed to go to the beach? Are you allowed, if I can use a modern word that I learned from my grandchildren and my nephews, are you allowed to chill out? Chill out. Believe me, 70 years ago we never heard that word. 80 years ago we never heard. Spoke English already 80 years ago. I was already fluent in English. 4 years old. But chill out. Very interesting question. Yomo will testify that every morning from February until practically November, every morning I would tune in on the computer or with my regular website. Female, which I have to deal with seriously and answer questions. Arut Sheva, where I found out this morning about Red Lake's involvement, about the Kisod Olam. Yeshiva World News, I don't know. My bank, I think I taught Jomo, a person that's going to know what's going on in their bank account. It's a terrific thing today. They can do everything online and transfer money to grandchildren, great-grandchildren, can I inherit? And the New York Yankees. Oh my gosh, 5 minutes. When Howard Weisband ran, she wanted to buy me a subscription to the Yankees, to baseball. I think $100 it was at that time. You can get every game ever played, whatever that recorded, every game going on. Oh, wow. Now I think it's someone else wanted to buy me it was Steve Gross offered this. Said, Rebbe, I want to get you a gift. And I told them, absolutely not. If I have access to every game ever played, Torah Matachayola, I'll wind up being an Amoritz. But 5 minutes a day, you get the highlights. You're a kid again. A kid, no responsibility, just a kid. Go to Yankee Stadium, enjoy yourself. Where does it end? Elliot, are you a connoisseur of music? People go to hear concerts. My wife keeps going. She just showed last night she was tuned in to Shlomo Lakalbach in Leningrad. Yomo would enjoy it. He speaks and they translate him into Russian. Yomo's Russian is not as good as his English, I can testify. But I had him type in Russian for me last week and he had to go to Google and get the equivalent from English to Russian. And the person we typed to answered us in Hebrew. Huh. So it shows you what happened. Yeah, I got an answer. Tanayin Haru, I'm talking, Hank, Bawa, I can tell you who I corresponded with, Yosef at Tzadik Mendelovich. And I wanted to have some fun with him. Yosef and I go back to the day he arrived in Israel. He married my student. I mean, not a small matter. Got married right here on the terrace that you don't know. Menachem Begin one side, Yitzhak Nivon on the other side. 1981, police all over. You should have seen the security. Can I infer? So this is a very serious question. It's been widely, widely discussed in the Alamim. And here, the Alamim, in other words, contemporary Israel, in our world, the Rabbi Moshe Weinberger, the atom bomb that he dropped right now. Does anyone know where he gave that talk? People are asking me to comment, and I'm very hesitant. I mean, all I, Yoma will tell you, I answered that I've been out of America 53 years. I don't want to talk about Israel. He hit the nail on the head. There's no question that the army divide is the basic vision in Torah society here. I don't have to tell you, anyone who lives here knows what I'm talking about. So he's right on what he said there. And I can testify that Rabbi Steinman got death threats when he came out in favor of Nachal Haredi. What's interesting is Rabbi Shach didn't get death threats. He said something even sharper than anyone when he said, if someone's not learning in the yeshiva, he's a rodent. His place is in the army, not creating ill will towards the yeshiva. But okay, but I'm curious where he said it, because I get the feeling from the recording, someone sent me a link, very important people, Talmidim of mine from Canada, world-class people, and I had to listen. They said, comment on it. And I have a feeling it was not in YU, I have a feeling it was in his shoe. But I'm curious where he said it and why the right wing is so upset.
What did he say?
He said that he accused the yeshiva world, evidently the right world, I don't know what he means by you too, that they take off too much time from learning, they have to chill out, and they wind up smoking and vapor, I don't know what he's talking about even, what's the vapor? Electronics, whatever. And drinking, and then he told a story that was very shocking. And there, I don't know, you see, one thing I learned in life, and let me give you some life experience. Some of you are young, are going to be rabbanim, going to be teachers. You're never going to succeed entirely. There's always going to be a maneuver in the crowd. That's nothing you can do about it. That's the way people are. I'm proud to tell you that in 1969, when I came in Aliyah, there was one kid I taught in the 60s in YU, and he was wild as can be. And they say at Hebrew U, he was dead at Hebrew U, and it came back to me with such compliments that he was dead drunk, he was on drugs and looking, going crazy, and he was cursing all the rabbis in the world. And he said, all the rabbis are phonies. There was only one rabbi I knew and had as a rebbe who was a great, honest individual, Rabbi Rothkopf. And wow, was I proud. I said, yeah, I know, I teach kids, some of them are murderers, some of them are gangsters, some of them are rapists, some of them are seducers, but they're the minority, and you got to reach out to them too. Maybe one day they'll straighten out. So, you know, you can't take one kid and say, all right, this, you should know, I remember his name, I don't want to mention the name, and later I heard there's a rabbi with that exact name in the Ur Sameach crowd. Could be it's him. Could be it's him. Don't want to say a word. So my Talmud, Rabbi Moshe Weinberger, said that he heard in the yeshiva a group of guys who are married got together, I can't even repeat it, forgive me. They rented a plane, and they went for a few days, and on the plane, they rented some women. I don't want to elaborate. All right. He's being highly castigated. Again, is that something normal, normative? You see it once, twice, or is it just one group of Rishayim? You understand? If it's one group of Rishayim, you can't criticize. Okay. Anyway. But that raises the questions he's raising is chilling out. what do you do, Bein Hasmanim, what do you do between terms, chilling out? All right, I have to be honest with you. You're looking at a person who never chilled out. I'm responsible. When I was a kid in an MTA, I felt very bad. We're wasting a summer. I campaigned. We need a Rebbe to teach. There were four or five of us. I got to give credit to Yeshiva University. They hired a Rebbe just to teach us during the summer. Reb Shmuel Feigershevitz was my Rebbe. Later, he went to BTA. Those listening there, some Talmud of his who will be listening, we were his first students in the summer. And in the summer, that's when I really bonded with Reb Aaron Lichtenstein. The babe was in the Beis Medrash all the time. And we would play a little basketball. And he was terrific. He was tall. Any team that had Reb Aaron, we used to call him the babe. I can't say Reb Aaron. He was a kid then. Anyone that had the babe on his basketball team, he had a good chance of winning. He was tall. But we chilled out for a little. And then I remember Reb Shmuel Feigershevitz said, he sweated so much. He watched the basketball game. And he said, I'm amazed that you came to shiur the next day. He didn't understand. You play basketball, you get sweaty, you go home, you take a shower, you recover in a minute. But he came from me. And here, I just want to tell you, let me introduce the story. My wife always quotes the story, and she asked me where the source is. All right, so I can tell you it's a dual source. The source is in the volume that his son-in-law, Rabbi Goldberg, published in the introduction, and I yet had the privilege of talking many times with a Talmud of the Mechita, who actually was next to him when this happened. And what am I talking about? Yeshiva University, again, I came to do all my lectures, but all of you know I brought to life the yeshiva. My cousin, Rabbi Revel, was very upset when people looked at Reitz and MTA and what would become Yeshiva College and Yeshiva University as the second-rate institution. You can't compare it to what we have in Europe. And he decided he has to get a top-grade Gaon Adir to be the Rosh Yeshiva. And he turned to Europe, and he was able to get Rav Shlomo Palachek, the Mechita Ili. The reason the Mechita Ili was the Reb Chaim Griske said about the Mechita, that he was the greatest Ili he ever had as a student. The Mechita was one of a kind, Rav Shlomo Palachek. But the Mechita was willing to leave Europe. He's willing to leave Europe because he had become a Mizrahiite. And all the other Rosh Yeshiva were essentially identified with Agudat Yisrael. And he was looked upon as outside the normative path. And that's why when the Mir Rosh Yeshiva, Reb Lazy Yehuda Finkel, visited America in the mid-20s, and he said to the Mechita, why did you leave Europe? You would be today the most famous Rosh Yeshiva. And the Mechita answered him, even if I'd stayed in Europe, because of my hashkafas, I'd have to have one foot in Europe and one foot in America. So the Mechita was very happy. He came, as you know, September 1st, 1922. I hope in Gris, in this building, we should make a big event for September 1st. 2022, 100 years since the Mechita came to the United States. Now, the Mechita lived in Williamsburg, and he took the train to the Lower East Side where the yeshiva was on East Broadway. Students from Williamsburg would accompany him, you know, two train stops, three train stops, then you're at the yeshiva. Well, it was a long, hard winter, and now the winter's over, it's a spring day. And it was like 8:45, yeshiva began at 9. And in front of the yeshiva were a whole group of what you would call Reitz boys, MTA boys, playing ball. And the Meitzchit looked at that group and said, and I quote, "Ah, what a beautiful sight. Why didn't we play ball in our youth? We would be the same Talmidei Chachamim that we became, other than that Gehat HaYugend, we would have had a youth. I never had a youth." Quote, end quote. A very powerful quote. I can tell you, over the generations, I've been privileged not just to teach members of the Meitzchitz family, but even to be a sandik at one of his great-great-grandchildren. I can tell you that the Meitzchitz was privileged to have endless descendants, kulam shomrei Torah mitzvot, or I should say 90%, there's one part of the family that fell away, and endless descendants living in the state of Israel, and unbelievable people. Many agudah leaders came nowhere near being privileged to what the Meitzchitz was zeicher. And I can tell you, members of the family told me recently that you should know that he suffered from the fact that his father made him start learning Gemara at the age of 3, never allowed him to play and be a kid. And that comment that he made is exactly representative or reflective of his life. All right, that was the Meitzchitz. He died young. He died in 1928 of an infection in his gum, which today is cured by one shot of antibiotics. The Meitzchitz left 4 children, 2 sons and 2 daughters. One daughter married Rabbi Goldberg, who was the Meitzchitz's Talmud, a first-rate Talmud Chacham. Was Rav in Brooklyn. I don't know if there are any descendants left in America. They may all be here on Atmat HaKodesh. We knew them all from Bnei Akiva. His other daughter, who was Rabbi Rebel's girl Friday, secretary, and ran his office, she married another Talmud of the Meitzchitz, to Rabbi Mapshowitz, and he was rabbi in a conservative shul, you see. And it's sad, because the Talmud, a Talmud of the Meitzchitz, married to his daughter. And Rabbi Belkin wanted, when in the 1960s, when the fundraising became too difficult, Rabbi Belkin already was suffering his health from the responsibility, he wanted him to become the vice president and in charge of fundraising. Would have been tremendous help to Rabbi Belkin. But by that time, there was an outcry in the yeshiva. You can't bring in someone who is rabbi of the conservative temple. That temple exists until today in Hillcrest. Any of you who know Queens, in San Union Turnpike, and the square in front of it is named in Rabbi Mapshowitz's memory. How much longer it could continue, I don't know. Within our lifetime, it'll be taken over by from Jews, because they're the only ones left who care about going to shul. All the conservative people have reformed, have either assimilated, intermarried, or moved out of Queens. And one by one, these buildings are taken over. But that was the Meitzchitz. The 2 sons, one was a professor of math, lived in Washington. The other one was a very famous medical doctor, a specialist, later came in Aliyah, I knew him very well, from Yerushalayim. And they have wonderful children that show up all over, from the Goldberg family to Palachek's family. And there it's a story that I can tell you that I've told many times. If I told you in class, stop me. But one time, you know, that I did basic training at the age of 38. Cut off point then was 39. And I was very, whatever I did, the basic training, my activities brought me to the attention of the generals in the IDF. And one general sensed for me, and we became very, very close. And over the years, I have 15 years of Miluim, and one time I get a call from General Navon, Chief Rabbi of the IDF, Gad Navon, and he says to me, we're running a course for Army rabbis, it's open to everyone, as you know, and someone has applied who's coming on the out from Yeshiva University. And I say, what's his name? He says, Shlomo Palachuk. I say, look, אני אומר לו, אני לא מכיר אותו באופן אישי, אבל אני כבר מאמין מן השם מי היה הסבא רבא שלו. כדאי, או הסבא שלו, תכניס אותו לקורס. 2 months later, I get a call from General Navon. He says, can you recommend anybody else from Yeshiva University to me? He says, number one in the course. And remember, there were fellows there from Panovich, from Hebron, from Merkaz Harav, you name it, that every yeshiva, number one, Rav Shlomo Palachuk of Rehovot. I said to him, listen, considering who his grandfather was, you're not going to find too many on his level. But that's the nature of it. And this is a very serious question. And he doesn't give the name of the person asking it. It's in Mishnah Halacha, Chelek Yud Bet, Siman Tav Ayin Bet.
Was it?
And you asked me, is it forbidden for Bakurim Halchim Lishol Kadur O Kiyetzaba Rak Lishem Mishakim? In other words, we all know you have to work, you need panasa, yafetorim derecheret, sheshet yamim tasem alach pekla. That's a given. We all know you have to eat and drink, it's important. Without that, you're not going to keep alive. We all know you have to get married, you have to have a nice wife, you have to have a partnership, you have to bring children into the world. But you can be a very fine Jew without playing basketball, without playing baseball, without going to concerts, without hearing music. And this raises the entire question. Now, I'll tell you what's fascinating. The start of the Tshuva, and again, you can work this all out. He gives you the sources. It begins with the Gemara in Beitza. The whole question of extracurricular activities, music, sports, and so whole machloket, whether you can indulge in sports on Shabbat. Some are matir, some are machmir. What's the prohibition? Rabbi Ephraim Shapiro came back so upset, he cried. I'll never forget his talk. And I can understand him. No, it's one thing to throw a ball back and forth on Shabbat. I've done it many, many times. I don't believe I did it with children because I only had daughters, but I certainly did it with grandchildren. This Shabbat, we did it with great-grandchildren, throwing the ball back and forth, great-grandchildren. What's wrong with it? Me'ika hadin, it is absolutely mitzvah. Then imagine playing a game of baseball where you're keeping score. I'm not, even not writing down, but this is serious. It's not just throwing the ball into the loop. This is serious. And you're sweating and you care. I agree with Rabbi Ephraim Shapiro. It is not permissible. It's not in the spirit of Shabbat. And he was very upset, and I can understand it. And you have to draw a distinction if you're younger, if you're older. And he says, Me'ika l'din, this is certainly mutter. If it's a machloket about Shabbat, then certainly during the week, you would be allowed. There's no question. But then And this is our tremendous problem. Kol ze lahamon ha'am. The masses. But we who hold by learning b'nei Torah, and this question, b'tel Torah, where do you draw the line? And I have to tell you, this haunts us. Haunts me, at least. From the day I turned 11, I would say, Torah, so much to learn. I was exposed to giants, to Rabbi Aaron Cutler, Mori Rebbe Hamuta, Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik. And they didn't know it all. You could catch them. You know the story with Rabbi Aaron, I've told it many times, with Rabbi Schwartzman. Rabbi Aaron's giving a shiur in Chevron, and Rabbi Dov is sitting with his feet on the table. And Rabbi Aaron gets hysterical, does he's covered a Torah, this is covered a Torah. And Rabbi Dov says, if the Rosh Yeshiva, the Klepto Rosh Yeshiva would know how to learn, I would give cover. And he shoots a Rambam at him that shoots down the shiur. The Rav, I know myself, there were certain things I would talk with the Rav. I would mention a source. I remember the Akedat Yitzchak. I don't think he ever held the Akedat Yitzchak in his hand. No one knows everything. Rav Heschel Schachter, I can tell you, cites sources that I don't believe the Rav ever held this Rav in his hand. Sholem Aleichem, Galatianus, etc., etc. No one knows it. And you're exposed to these people, Gedolei Yisrael, and you say to yourself, I can't take off a minute from learning. Where do you draw the line? Where do you draw the line? I need not tell you the whole opposition to college. Rabbi Aaron Cutler was hysterical. The Baruch Hashem Bazaar, the Gemara and Caleb in Sanhedrin. Where do you draw the line? All right. And if you went, and remember, I always give the example, if nowadays you go to a Rebbe in YU, some of the Rebbeim, and you'll say to them, Rebbe, are you want to get a degree, want to make a living? I'm interested in Chinese literature. No, many Rebbeim would say to you, Chinese literature, that's a waste of time, it'll take so long, you'll have to master Chinese and the language and the literature. Better become an accountant. You can do it in 2-3 years and you're finished, you go to work. Where do you draw the line? And a person, look at some of the YU graduates are in every type of knowledge in the world. All right, you can say medicine is limitless. The better the doctor you are, the better the specialist. But do we have to be involved in all the humanities? And where do you draw the line? And this question, there's no black and white answer. It has to do with you, the individual, with the learning, with the environment, with your desires, with your achievements, with your capabilities. Where do you draw the line? Now, I'll end off the class here. I just want a brief introduction. Modern times, we left the ghetto. We left the ghetto as approximately 1750, 1760, the Ashkenazim, Germany, Mendelssohn. Leaving the ghetto, the original students of Mendelssohn and his own family totally assimilated, became non-Jews. I need not tell you, you can argue from today to tomorrow, Mendelssohn, the great-grandson of the Ramah, was born a good Jew, died a good Jew, but only one grandchild died Jewish. I don't believe any great-grandchild died Jewish. The world beyond blinded them. I'm saying it in a very popular fashion. I need not tell you I've given endless lectures on the topic. Rabbi, Professor Jacob Katz, this was a specialty among, in addition to halacha, the whole question of tradition and change, tradition and challenge. What did develop among some Jews who refused to leave, but they were influenced by the Enlightenment, they developed an attitude towards learning Torah, what we call Wissenschaft des Judentum, translate Chochmat Yisrael, perhaps, translates scientific Jewish scholarship. And this is very different than traditional learning. Traditional learning, what I call Talmud Torah, the traditional type of Talmud Torah, you're interested in the sugya, just in the halacha, the daf before you. When you wind up in Chochmat Yisrael, Wissenschaft, you look at the daf before you, and you already get involved in a scientific approach. Is this the correct Talmud? Is this the correct Girsa? What is the chronological order? And it may not be the halacha that interests you as much as coming up with a volume, and volumes like this have been written. The food that the Jews ate during the Talmudic period. The furniture that the Jews had. The lady did a doctor on this in Bar Ilan, Rabbi Professor Dov Slotnick's daughter, a Kirschenbaum, married to Rabbi Professor Kirschenbaum, studied. A giant of thinking. But you see, what is of more interest? What is more important? Or do we need both? I need not tell you this is a question open to endless discussion. Hildesheimer Rabbinic Seminary was strictly Orthodox, but was total Wissenschaft. The yeshiva we grew up in, Yeshiva Svetzchol Chanan, and all the yeshivas in Israel, Lakewood and Panovich and Mechas Haram, we are the traditional way of learning. Could very well be, after you master the traditional way, you can add icing on the cake by going into academia. And there I give you the example of Professor Rabbi Doctor, my classmate Chaim Soloveitchik. His work on Stam Yainam is classic. And it's a work that you cannot do unless you're bucking Shas and Poskin and are great in academia. Now, one of the fallouts of the new approach of Chochmat Yisrael was being aware, being sensitive to manuscripts that we no longer have and are just being discovered. And here you come to something Yomo referred to, Tshuvat HaRambam. In modern times, the Cairo Geniza and all that the Cairo Geniza represents, it opened up an entire world of research, of discovery. And next week, there's Rat Hashem, the heart of the Shir is a tshuva discovered from Maimonides. And I'll give you the tshuva and explain it, and you'll see how Reb Menashe Klein utilizes it. My dear students, I want to thank you, first of all, for honoring me with your presence. Young men have responsibility, newlyweds, new parents, and the old timers here, at least for some of you, to get here is not so simple. To live in East Talpiyot and get to Gris, it is a challenge. To those of you who, and to get for the Bukharan quarters to Gris is a challenge. Mark, you started the day in Beit Shemesh or up the hill, so for you it was the least challenge. Your skahalika was minimal. But I want to thank all of you for participating. And what we did today, we finished up the trip. It's interesting. Fabulous, the way Rav Menashe Klein, the Chabalah, you're permitted to damage your body for the sake of looking better. a woman strives to be skinnier. Why men want size to women, it's beyond my comprehension. I have more of a Russian attitude. Although my wife agrees with the skinnier side, I can understand the Russians' sedapsein zaftik, something to hold on to. Ribbono shel olam, a mother, children. And yet I see skinny women can be mothers of 6, 7, 8 children. I look at them, how did they do this? They're little people. They can be blown away by a wind. And take a look how God created women. Boy, they are the centerpiece of God's creation. I humbly bow before the greatness of women. This is why we say Shalom Tanisha. There are reasons we have more mitzvah, because we're wild individuals than men. Look at the Sefer Chinuch. But there's a homiletical reason we stand in awe of women to give birth, raise children, sagit, ubanin, birth, the pains of birth, childbirth, etc. I told some idiot who gave me an argument, I say, Shalom Shani Yishra, I say, when you can give birth, you'll ask the question again. Until then, don't be a fool. I gave him a source. The English translation of Mendelssohn's Yeshua in 1840, London. Look at the introduction by Moshe Samuel, the translator. You can see already almost 200 years ago, wise guys were playing games with Torah Hashem Tamila. All right, we set the stage. Can you play ball? And then what comes afterwards, then we're going to deal with Shulchan Rambam, Professor Blau, Zeicher Tzadik Livracha, the Rambam, Kedosh Tiyu. And then I'm going to move sideways just for a minute to show you another machlokes between Rav Menashe Klein and Rav Moshe, but very fascinating, involving Tzva Haganah LiYisrael. Be'ezrat Hashem tomorrow, by the way, tomorrow's shiur is extremely important. I'm going into Rudolf Kastner, and I'm not pulling punches, as you will see. Be'ezrat Hashem. So until we meet again in health and happiness at 9 a.m. Jerusalem time tomorrow morning, Das V'Danya. Mark, can you open it up to the world? Let's see if there are any questions from the erudite audience staring at me on the screen. 1 second. I want to say, okay. Okay, anyone have any questions? Okay. Are they hearing me? Everyone looks like they're half asleep. If you're hearing me, wave.
We can talk.
Okay. Can anyone have any questions? Mark says you can speak. Wow. No questions? Mark Licht, where are you? I see someone standing behind you. Who is that? Well, we woke him up, I'm afraid. Okay, he has a right to be asleep. It's what time in Brooklyn? Okay, until we meet again in health and happiness, thank you so much for honoring me with your screen presence. Das V'Danya.